Theotech Podcast. We're getting started tonight talking about creative tools for ministry. This kind of was inspired because Adobe just recently came out with their new update to all of their creative cloud products, and some of those look interesting. But we also thought we'd get into talking about maybe other tools you can use if you deal with your church's website or your ministry's website. Maybe you make video or images or graphics for your church's worship services or flyers, whatever. If you do anything that's kind of on the creative side of digital publishing and digital media, then we're going to kind of talk about that for a little while. It probably won't go the whole show. We might do about half of that, the other half just talk about some of the fun gadgets that we've been playing with. But I've got three of our fine Theotech contributors here tonight. Hopefully the other two will jump on, but we'll jump off. Our newest member of the team, Mark Allison, with Accordance Bible Software is here, and he's busily getting ready for ETS, and what's the other one called?
SBL, Society of Biblical Literature. They run them back-to-back every year.
And we're glad that you're here. Rick, I'm sure you're getting ready for that as well, huh?
Yes, I am, and good evening to all of you.
And Rick Warren. You're Rick Warren. Yes, Pastor Saddleback Valley Community Church is here. Rick Mansfield, who is also with Accordance Bible Software. And then Wes Allen, who's looking sort of mysterious with us tonight.
Yeah, I'm having issues with bandwidth. I'm going to go try to fix my lighting. But so I'm on my iPad tonight.
That's fine. He is a pastor and also works with the American Baptist Church of New Jersey, doing a lot of their tech stuff. And we're excited that you're here because I think you probably have spent some more time with some of these things than many of us have. But let's just talk about it. First of all, Adobe just recently released an update. And, you know, these products, if you're, you know, a hardcore serious user, you probably notice the updates more than others. I'm not one of those. And so for the very simple things that I do with it, you know, and the little time that I've had to spend on it, I haven't really noticed a lot of great deal of differences. Probably the biggest one that people might notice is it came out with a new version of Lightroom. And Wes, you've kind of looked at that a little bit. You're not real pleased with the new version, are you?
I'm up in the air. Sorry, I'm trying to get where I'm
going. I understand. I threw that at you while you're trying to adjust.
I don't know what's
fair.
Your video keeps going in and out. I might have to drop out in a couple minutes. I'm up in the air about it. One of the things that I'm a little perturbed about is just unique to me because I bought my subscription for Creative Cloud through Amazon. And that means I can't get their existing user deal to get the 1 gigabyte or 1 terabyte of storage and Lightroom CC and for the $15 a month. I have to pay the $20 a month, and that's a little annoying. That's really where I'm at. The same way is that I like the idea of Apple Photos having your library with you at all times, no matter what. I think that's great. I do think that Adobe really, they need to work on how they're. I know one of my friends who did get the 1 terabyte with the Lightroom Classic and Lightroom CC, he can't upload his library right now because every time he tries to, Lightroom CC literally boom mode on. Because there's no bandwidth regulation on it and it just floods the dang thing and it crashes.
Oh, okay.
So like Adobe really, they did not code this well. And so that's things that I'm a little leery at. I'm actually beginning to look more and more seriously at doing Luminar instead of Lightroom. I have a digital library coming out in 2018. But I really do like having Lightroom on my iPad. I have a bummer, so I'm still up in the air about what I'm going to do. It's basically the future of what's going on, and having all my stuff with me at all times, that's probably worth a good $120 worth a year.
Yeah. I think one of the interesting things, you know, the new Lightroom CC, we're looking at a video of it being, you know, presented on Adobe.com. It's essentially their mobile app and their web app, only in a desktop software. And so I think
it's the mobile app. It's basically the mobile app. So it's a little more robust than the web app.
Right.
Not by much.
And so what they're sort of trying to go in that direction, but they've now changed the name from Adobe Photoshop Lightroom to Lightroom Classic. And they promise, hey, it's mm-hmm. always going to be there, but you never know with things like that. So now you have two Lightrooms, which
well,
is...
Well, there's so many professionals who rely on Classic, and there's so many features that just don't work well in the Lightroom CC interface that I don't see them dropping it anytime soon until they get feature parity. But there's certain things, like with the way that they did this... really classic with this release.
So
it hadn't been updated.
Half of what you said.
I'm sorry. I really am having a hard time.
That's okay.
I'm going to drop off as soon as I get done with this. But they've really increased the speed of Lightroom Classic. When you import photos into Lightroom Classic now, it does it really, really fast. It handles all the processing. It will do the conversion to DNG. The renaming and all that stuff. Real zippity quick. The problem is, with these new plans, even if you have that 1 terabyte of storage, if you import into Lightroom Classic and go to upload it to your 1 terabyte library, which is what a lot of professionals would really like to do, it won't upload the raw file. It will only upload the smart preview. So if you want to get the raw files to upload, you have to do it through Lightroom CC, which means you lose all the benefits of their new import abilities in Lightroom Classic, and you lose the ability to do like conversion into DNG when you import, or renaming the files when you import, putting it into specific folders for your local storage. So you lose all that ability with development, and I just don't think Adobe thought it through all the way. The fact that, you know, some people who are uploading their libraries are crashing their cable modems really shows me that Adobe really didn't think this through as well as they should have.
Well, it feels like an interim piece of software, almost like, hey, you know, come over here. It's not quite ready, but take a look at it and play with it for a while. Or maybe it's, you know, we're focusing on the consumer mentality instead of the professional. And, you know, Apple kind of did that.
Yeah, and for Adobe, that's just a mistake. Yeah, it's just not good enough at that to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's more than just... the other products are there, but that's probably the biggest difference, don't you think? I mean, I haven't really looked at much of the others.
You dropped out of there for a second, Kev.
I was going to say, I haven't really taken a serious look at too many of the other programs yet. Is there much difference in Photoshop and maybe Premiere or?
I've never used Premiere, so I don't know. The splitting between of Lightroom, Photoshop Lightroom, and just Lightroom, it just makes sense to me. I always thought that was a stupid thing to join together anyway at the hip. Essentially, they didn't change too much of the apps. They just added this new Lightroom CC and the 1 terabyte of storage. You can have an online library. So if you think Apple Photos, that's essentially what they did. It's the iCloud photo library only through Adobe, except it's not implemented as well.
Well,
throwing my 2 cents. I used to be a professional photographer, worked for a newspaper and did weddings and stuff like that. I still do some weddings from time to time, stuff like that. But, it seems to me like, you know, 1 terabyte of space isn't a whole lot of space for a professional photographer that's, you know, like that needs to upload raw photos. And you were saying that you're uploading previews. So I guess that would be nice if you're going to go show a client some images. But for a professional photographer, I'll do I go through terabyte, you know, a terabyte's nothing, you know, so I've got, just stacks of hard drives over in my corner that are filled with images from different weddings and dance studio performances and things like that. But,
yeah, you would be paying for the upper levels of their storage.
Well, it just doesn't make sense to me a whole lot because, you know, the cool thing about Lightroom for me, was that, it gave you the ability to, it gives you the ability to, handle a bunch of raw images and then do batch processing on a bunch of them all at the same time. So if you took a bunch of portraits and needed to color correct them, you could color correct one and then batch process all of them, with those same adjustments. Yeah, I love it. I mean, Lightroom's awesome for a professional photographer, but I just don't see necessarily the need to upload, you know, I guess it seems like it's not giving you enough storage to really be useful unless you're just, like I said, going to just go show a client some previews or something.
For like professional photographers, it's the 1 terabyte is the base. For me, it's going to, it will last me for like three or four more years.
Yeah.
But for a professional photographer, it's basically the base.
Yeah.
So you can go to more storage, which is, you know, which is what they want you to do. And you can always, their plan is for professional photographers is for you to take your iPad or your iPhone with you.
Yeah.
Take your shoots and upload them through your iPad or your iPhone. So then what you do with on Lightroom CC, Lightroom Classic, when you get back to your computer, you can organize that to your heart's content over as many drives as you want. And you can actually say, don't sync this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the plan that they have. But just it gets even more convoluted than it already was.
Yeah.
So, how much does it cost to use these products? I've got the page up here that talks about the pricing. Oh no, this is just for Adobe Stock.
That's for all of them.
No, that was just
look up the photography plan.
Yeah, it's $10 a month, unless you want the extra storage.
$10 a month. Yeah, well, $10 a month will get you 20 gigs of storage and Photoshop, and then you can use Lightroom CC. So it's essentially the current, the previous photography plan online. Or you can do Lightroom CC, 1 terabyte of data. That's basically it. So that really is a consumer level offering.
Okay.
It's the equivalent of Apple Photos.
But if you want to add the other product, isn't it $50 a month?
For current users, it's $15 a month. For new users, which I'll get under if I have to do it, is $20 a month.
No, I'm talking about for everything, like to get Premiere and all the other.
No, it's $20 a month for 1 terabyte of storage. Photoshop, Lightroom CC.
I think it's 50 if you wanted everything. In
that's
design,
yeah, if you want everything.
Illustrator.
It's all, sorry, Kevin.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, $50 if you want the whole thing. All right.
I've got everything, and I paid $9.99.
I want to hear it. You and your.
But I resigned. I resigned from that position at IW, and so I'll be in trouble come December when it has to renew in a month.
But isn't your wife a teacher?
Yeah, yeah. So that's the route I'm going to go.
Yeah. Well, you can get $30 a month, I think.
They've got it for $20 a month. I get everything.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Education discount.
Yeah, that's my struggle right now. I don't feel comfortable going under my wife's education plan for my stuff.
Oh, great. Make me feel bad.
As much as she uses the benefits of what I'm creating, I don't
have to deal
with it whatsoever.
That is very true.
She doesn't use any of my stuff, so it's fine.
Justified.
If you loved her enough to help her,
that's where I am.
Be easier to
do. Right now what I'm actually looking at is I'm wondering if I should pre-order the Luminar 2018, which is a raw processing suite right now. They're adding a digital library that will work with Adobe libraries, Lightroom libraries in 2018. And that's something that I may actually give up having that on my Adobe Lightroom on my iPad. Because I can't, they're pricing me out of existence with the subscription.
Wes, go ahead and explain what you're talking about. I've got it up on the screen here, but.
Luminar 2018, it was Mac Fun. Now I forget what their name is because they just changed their name. You have the old URL up there still. I don't know if they brought it over. But this is, it's essentially that their raw photo processing. And it's, they just rewrote it for 2018. It's supposed to be really, really good. They're working on a library module, which is the one thing that's been missing. You know, you can use, the light tables, LUTs to do adjustments. You can actually bring in your Adobe plugins. This is the way they've designed it. So they're really working to get this kind of market for people that are kind of getting tired of being at the mercy of whether Adobe's going to continue their subscription or not.
I used to review MacFun products when they were basically just little gadgety apps on the iPhone. And, you know, they were cool. Mm-hmm. They were neat. But they've really stepped it up. I mean, they are – because I've got like Luminar 2017. That's one of the last major apps that I reviewed before I left Gotta Be Mobile. And that's a pretty great program, especially if you do a lot of HDR photography. It's a really nice HDR app. So that's a great alternative, and it's not a subscription-based system. What's the price?
Right, $60.
$50? It's,
right now, their pre-order is really a nice deal. Their pre-order for Luminar 2018, which comes out in December, is $59. It will do the new library module that comes out in 2018. They don't know when, so that could be, you know, next December for all we know. And also, if you pre-order, you get a free year of Smug Mug.
Yeah, that's another thing. If you owned the previous version, if you owned the 2017 version, it's actually, I think, $30.
It's $39 or something like that. Yeah, it's
amazing. That's what I actually went ahead and ordered it because it's also Mac and Windows now, which I like.
I'm honestly considering going over that, and I'll tell you, I love doing photo recovery in Lightroom Mobile using my Apple Pencil. Honestly, considering making the jump over to Luminar, just because I'm terrified that they're going to screw with the subscription, and I will be out high and dry.
Yeah, that's the downside that you hate to be dependent upon some of these companies, especially.
I'm sorry. I was just real quickly. I was confusing the HDR. They have a program called Aurora.
Aurora is
the HDR thing.
Some of those features are built into. There's the more full featured is Aurora. I think one of the cool things, and this is one of the things that I have to look at, is Luminar says is that when they come out with their library, they're going to up to work with whatever cloud storage you want. So that's I'm interested to see how that works out, because if I can do a 2 terabyte plan through iCloud and store my library drive or, you know, photos library, whatever it is on the, on an external drive, you know, then I still get my cloud stuff and I can work on things, and that would make me happy.
Well, that's a great alternative. Talk about some other ones, guys. Photoshop alternatives. We've talked about, you know, Luminar, the MacFun things. What else do you guys use for, photo editing? And on any product, on any platform. Rick, how about you?
Alternatives? I mainly use the Adobe stuff, to be honest, because that's – and I use Illustrator more than I use Photoshop. But there is one that I occasionally use, and all of a sudden I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, but I've got it on my computer here somewhere.
Pixelmator?
Yeah, that's it. Pixelmator. Yeah, that's the other one I use.
I love the Pixelmator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've got that on both my iPad. And in fact, I that's kind of my go-to on my iPad, but I've got it on the iPad and the Mac.
Tell us a little bit about Pixelmator. What makes it a valuable alternative?
Well, you know, it's different, but it's different than Photoshop, but it's got a lot of neat features. Like I said, I don't use it as much. I use it more probably on the Mac, but on the iPad, but I'm loading it up here. If you kind of think of some of the shortcuts that like a Photoshop Elements would have, it's beyond that. You know, I mean, it's more advanced than Elements, but you know, it's one of you guys may want to speak to it more, who uses it more often than I do.
Yeah, Pixelmator's really, 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 really fast. And then they, like, Kevin, you have your window up, but they're coming out with Pixelmator Pro.
Yeah.
Pixelmator, it's kind of an old school Mac app that is, everything's done in separate windows. So Pixelmator Pro apparently will finally get you the one window interface, which will be really nice. There's very little workflow that I can do in, Photoshop that I can't do in Pixelmator. Photoshop handles text better. And you know, I think it does some of the adjustments a little bit better. And Pixelmator just is really fast.
Yeah, there's also a great course on Pixelmator in lynda.com.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to check that out.
How about on the video side? What do you use? Premiere is kind of what I use just because I've got it. But
I use Premiere.
I use Final Cut.
I used Final Cut for years since the first, probably the first version that ever came out. And but then when they made that radical shift and completely changed the interface, I went with Premiere because Premiere is actually more like the old Final Cut same kind of philosophy as far as how everything's laid out, and things like that. One of the things that really bothered me is that when I'm editing video, I have an external TV connected to my computer so that I can see how it looks, you know, whether text is cropped or something like that. And when that new version of Final Cut Pro came out, it didn't have support for external monitors. Now it does now,
yeah.
But at the time, yeah, mm-hmm. It was pretty basic. So I made the switch. Once I've gotten used to Premiere, I like it a lot.
Have any of you used this, Luma Fusion?
No, I'm really interested in picking it up though, Kev.
I put this on my iPad, and of course on my computer, that's where I do most of my video editing is on a computer, whether it's my Mac or my PC, but I really like this. Luma Fusion is a great product for video editing, and I don't know why I don't do more of my video on my iPad, because editing with a finger on an iPad, yeah. The Apple Pencil on an iPad is actually a lot more precise than doing it.
I agree.
And so I really prefer it. I've used iMovie. I just don't like iMovie that well.
Well, I want iMovie to do more. That's a, but I've been wanting to look at the Luma Touch on the iPad myself. But one thing that I use in both Mac and Windows is Camtasia. I do a lot of the Accordance instructional videos in Camtasia.
Okay. Camtasia, I always think of as a screen recorder, but you can just do basic video editing, I guess.
Yeah, it'll do video editing. But, you know, I do that. I record the screen, but then it will allow you to very easily do the call outs and add text and so forth and zoom in. And you can do this with other programs too, but Camtasia is really made for it. It will also do the thing that I haven't used it for yet, where you can do interactive videos as well, where you wait for the user to perform some kind of action before it goes forward. I haven't created those yet, but Camtasia has been very good for what it, you know, for that purpose of making instructional videos.
Well, that's a great option. What about for sound editing? I know Adobe has, I can't remember what it's called. I don't use it. What's the Adobe sound product? Do you guys remember? No one does. So.
Doesn't really use it.
Popular. Let's see. I had it on here a minute ago.
The latest from
Illustrator.
The latest.
While you're looking at that, let me just say that what's been frustrating for me is that a lot of my video clients want DVDs, and Adobe and Apple have been either getting rid of or completely neglecting their apps that are used for DVD creation. So Adobe Encore is the app that Adobe uses, and it hasn't been updated in any of the suites for like the past two or three revisions. And with Apple, it was what?
iDVD.
Yeah, or DVD Studio Pro, either one of those. And they gotten rid of both of those.
Well, I still have iDVD on my system, but I haven't turned it. I haven't loaded it probably still 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I think it still works amazingly, but yeah, I mean, it's pretty. It's been deprecated for sure, which is kind of interesting because I can't be the only person out there that needs to make DVDs. But for me, that's the issue. I always need to make sure that I can get my video out of whatever program I'm using and onto a DVD, which usually that's not a problem. It's just what are you going to use to actually create the menus and stuff like that.
Toast will create DVDs too.
Yeah, I've used that, and that does, yeah, that'll do some basic stuff. Yep.
Is that the old Roxio product?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they keep it up to date. They're still coming out with new versions.
I hadn't used that.
I don't use it much anymore, but and I don't have the newest version, but for the longest time, I always made sure I had the newest.
The only thing that irritates...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, the only thing that irritates me about Roxio is that they charge you almost the same price for upgrading as a new version when they come out with it. But
I haven't had any need to use it, so I haven't upgraded. You know, you asked about sound apps in iOS. Ferrite is very good.
Yeah, that's right. It is. Yeah. Adobe Audition is the product I was trying to think of the name of.
Okay.
I've never really used it. I actually do my sound editing in Premiere because it's so simple that I throw the bumper on the beginning of our podcast and on the end, and then I export it, and that's it. Since I already know how to use Premiere, I just use it. But for sound at our church, we use Audition. Mm-hmm. Not Audition, Audacity.
Yeah, I've got that.
And it's just as good as, you know, anything, and it's free. And
it's free, yeah.
Rock solid and stable, and multi-channel editing if you need it. We don't really need it. We just, they make the CDs out of, that we give out to our shut-ins, you know, with the Sunday morning worship service, and that's really all that we use it for. But if you needed it for more, it would have a lot more to it. And like I said, it's free. There's a lot of plugins available for it. All right, what else? What other creative products do you guys want to recommend as we think about these tools? What about for web design or web, you know, anybody, you do any of that kind of thing in a piece of software other than just basic bare coding?
Let me just mention I use Sound Studio by Felt Tip Software. I've used that for years. It's a really good sound editing, audio editing program if you want something. It's really nice if all you're wanting to do is like just trim stuff or, work on the levels or something like that. It's really simple, but sometimes I like just the simple tools that don't do anything fancy. But, Sound Studio, I think it might just be Mac only.
Yeah, Sound Studio 4 from Felt Tip.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
Kevin, if you're doing web design, you're not wanting to like use a thing like WordPress or something. I think one of the applications that is dead simple for creating a website that creates really good websites, and then you can use plugins to do some more advanced layout is called RapidWeaver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got
and, I mean, I've used that in the past, and I bought some plugins to do some real advanced layout stuff, and it just creates beautiful websites. And everything's set up for responsive design. It's really good.
Yeah, my original thislamp.com, not the current one, but the original one was done in RapidWeaver.
Mm-hmm. I use RapidWeaver too, and there are a lot of companies out there that make plugins, different themes,
yep,
plugins, things for RapidWeaver. So yeah, it's an excellent tool for that.
That's a Mac only product, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, the Stacks, especially the Stacks plugin is the one that does the advanced layout. It's so cool to use, and it just creates really, really good websites.
Mm-hmm. What about, you know, you'd mentioned WordPress, and that's one of the most popular, back end systems. That's what, you know, if you go to theotech.com, that's a WordPress site. Do any of you have experience using others besides WordPress?
Yeah, I'm using Squarespace.
Yeah, me too.
And I got to tell you, I really love it. It's different. So WordPress, you have to create if you're going to not use WordPress.com, you basically set up your own server instance and run WordPress. which is nice because you get an incredible amount of flexibility. You can use all the plugins and stuff, but you're entirely responsible for all your security and keeping spammers off. And that's, we used to do that for ABCNJ's site, and it just, it became a full-time job just keeping the dang thing up to date. And by the time you get done buying a security suite and, you know, protection and then getting an SSL certificate, you might as well just pay for a more expensive service. And that's why we switched to Squarespace. You lose some flexibility in plugin designs, but the service is amazing. Rick, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I agree. I was using WordPress, and of course my blog, thislamp.com, is, you know, very neglected. I hardly ever update it anymore, although my goal is to eventually get back to it. But anyway, I was in WordPress before Squarespace, and my problem was every time that I needed to tweak something in there that, you know, there was stuff like that would require Python or, you know, it was just beyond me. And so I had Joel Watts, who's with unsettledchristianity.com, he would go in and fix my stuff in Squarespace. And so I finally moved over to Squarespace, and I just liked it because it was much easier. I didn't have to program anything. And if you need help from those guys, they will work. They'll go out of their way to help you, and they respond, really, really quickly. And you know, the other thing is my particular website is like on a couple of versions old for Squarespace. I don't remember what version they're at now, but like you don't have to upgrade. If you don't want to, they'll let you stay at the other one. It still works. I can still add stuff to it. But it's one of those projects that'll take me, I think, 2 or 3 days to upgrade. So I haven't done that yet, but I'll eventually do it.
Just a tip for that. I don't know if they still are, but they advertise all over the web. So find a code, you know, coupon code from the dozen podcasts that they advertise on, and you get a little bit more. And you get it for a little bit less each month if you do that, I think. At least it used to be that way with, I'm a fan of the Twit podcasts and advertise and say, if you use this code, you know, then you'll get, what is it, like $2 off a month or something?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And one of the cool things that they do now is that if you get a site through Squarespace, whether you buy your domain through them or not, part of your subscription includes an SSL certificate. So you can run everything through a secure socket layer. So you're adding a little bit of security that helps them out. So it keeps things from being spoofed too much. And it kind of, if folks want to like create like storefronts through it, you know, they don't have that extra expense of going out and buying an SSL certificate. So you did a really nice job. What'd you say, Kev?
How much is it monthly?
For an SSL certificate or for Squarespace? Yeah, I don't know what we're paying with the ABCNJ, but I think the other sites that I'm doing.
Personal is $12 per month.
There you go.
And then $18 per month for business, and I'm not sure what the difference is.
Yeah, why am I paying $20 a month?
Yeah. Let me just say from personal experience, if, you know, Rapid Weaver is great, but you know, you have to have the software on your computer. And I've had a couple of people ask me to create websites for them. And I don't usually do that, but you know, sometimes, you know, they don't have any other option and they just want something simple. Anyway, Squarespace is great because you can set it up for them and then tell them, okay, now it's all up to you. And it's easy enough that once it's set up, anybody can add content and tweak it. It's really not it's a no brainer.
It's a service.
Yeah.
Right. Now you say it's, but if you're used to WordPress, going to that is going to be kind of at first you're going to be sort of like, what is going on? Cause I've tried to set up twice and both times I felt lost. I was just really struggled. And so I said, I don't need this. And plus my domain host, that I use is really cheap and they're rock solid. I've been with them for, 15 years. And if I'm ever down for more than 2 minutes, I'd be surprised. When I have been down for 2 minutes, more than 2 minutes, they respond pretty quick. It's a company called ICD Soft, and they are really fast to respond and get it fixed. But you know, it's just a bare host. They don't offer a whole lot of frills or extras. So like you're talking about an SSL for security, I don't think I get that.
You know, no, you get to buy that on your own and any type of thing, setting like that. Yeah, Kev, I was the same way. I tried Squarespace 2 times before I finally made the switch. And when it clicked, I was like, oh, and off I went.
Yeah. Well, because at $12 a month, it's twice as much as I pay now, and that's why I'm not
going
to jump anytime for that. Well, any other thoughts on these before we jump to maybe talking about some of our favorite things? The roast has been Antoine's been mighty quiet there. You got any suggestions for creative tools for ministry? He's shaking his head no.
But wait a minute. But we know he's a very creative person. So what is he?
He's probably the most creative artistically of all of them.
I know.
You got nothing.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Well, that's because most of the products that you guys are mentioning are products that folks who aren't in the same space of creative would use. Like, for example, like for web design, I could care less about the program. 99% of stuff has to have Bootstrap with it. And so it's whatever creation software supports, you write it in Bootstrap and you deploy it and you have a day, you know, so,
Bootstrap is.
Yeah, exactly. that's what I mean. So it's a different space. I do user experience on a state government level. So we don't have the luxury all the time of being able to say, hey, can we use like Rapid Weaver, for example?
Writing your stuff from scratch.
Almost, you know, it has to be accessible. It has to be usable. And then somebody who has absolutely no experience needs to be able to write it. So we got to build the CMS and all that other good fun stuff around it. So when I hear creative stuff for ministry, it's not necessarily a space where I'm not in that bucket as often, you know. I'm more on the process side of actually getting projects done, which that's a whole other conversation for another day.
Well, let's go ahead then, unless someone else has something to jump out at. Let's go ahead and move into our favorite things. Do you have anything, LaRosa? Why do I keep calling you LaRosa? Antoine? The reason is because you introduced me to LaRosa. That's why I always think of you two together.
Favorite thing. My only favorite thing, actually, I went to the National Museum of African American History and Culture yesterday. That is one of those DC, you must do it when you go to DC museums, and you will almost guarantee not to get all of it done in a day. Got there at 2:30 and the museum closed at 5, and I still missed a floor and a half. And that's after 4 floors of the concourse, and then there are 4 more floors of the museum. Absolutely amazing collection. Extremely emotional collection. You can take photos throughout the entire museum as you can with much of the Smithsonian. And it's very well done. Very, very well done. But there's one section, the Emmett Till exhibit, that you're not allowed to take any photography. They actually have the casket that the young Emmett Till was buried in. Powerful.
And for people like me who are ignorant, tell us who Emmett Till is.
Emmett Till was a young man who, in the early 60s, who took a trip with some friends to a place where his mother basically said, don't take a trip there. He ended up being accused of raping a white woman and was lynched. He was 12, 13 years old. And it was one of those steps on the way figuring out that racism just is not right. That exhibit, you know, amongst all the other stuff, is amazing. The sports exhibit is, it's crazy. The arts and music that I didn't get to, amazing. The history, you know, they actually had you walk through a slave ship, a model of a slave ship. And the way you have to walk through it, you're packed just like slaves were when you're walking through it with others. It's difficult to walk through the museum, and it's cool to walk through the museum. So favorite thing, totally.
Cool. Thank you. Mark, why don't you jump in if you've got one?
Yeah, I was going to say, just to piggyback on to what Antoine was saying, I was there at the museum in like 1979 in high school. But back then, I think it was in somebody's house. I mean, it wasn't very large at all. So it's really cool to hear that it's grown like that and become really significant. So that's excellent. I guess I'm going to mention a tool that I use every single day working for Accordance, but I use it as a text editor. It is a text editor, so I use it for editing text, whether it's an HTML page or whether I'm having to do find and replace, which I do a lot of that kind of stuff. If you want to use, some JavaScript stuff in it or whatever, it's BB Edit. The neat thing about it is that, it is unfortunately only for the Mac right now. I guess it always has been. It's been around forever. It's made by Barebone Software. They used to have a free, tool called Text Wrangler. Now what they've done is they've kind of gotten rid of that. I think you can still download it, but they've made BB Edit free unless it's kind of feature limited, and you can pay the extra amount to unlock it all. But even the free version has more stuff than Text Wrangler used to, and it's got all the really good stuff that just about any normal person would want to use for free. So again, that's Barebones Software, BB Edit. If you want an awesome, what I like about it, it's so simple to use. It doesn't have menus and stuff that get in your way. It just has the stuff you need, and it's just just an elegant, clean interface. I just love using it every day. So,
and it doesn't suck.
Yes, that's true too. I think I have a T-shirt that says that from them.
That's a great tagline. I mean,
yeah,
doesn't suck.
Yeah,
that's great. Okay, exactly. Thank you, BB Edit. And the guy when he shows up on Leo Laporte's show, he's always got his parrot on his shoulder with him.
Oh, really? Oh, I hadn't seen that, but that sounds like the kind of guy something he would do.
Yeah, Rick, have you got one?
What are we asking? What are we doing?
Favorite things? Have you got one?
Yeah, hey, I've got a favorite thing. It's not what I'm about to show you here, but it has to do with this. So this past week, I got this. This is a Samsung Galaxy Tab because I needed that. This is the Tab S3, and I needed that for a particular reason here, which you can tell what that reason is, perhaps maybe from my wallpaper. That's that I've got back there. If you can see
there you
that,
go.
But boy, I wrestled with this thing, and one reason I wanted this, we are going to finally come out with that Accordance for Android, but what's that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we are.
Great.
In fact, I've actually got a running version of it on this device. I just can't show you that. But anyway, like right now I do most of, for instance, I do the Accordance Mobile for iOS. I do the webinars, and of course I create some videos now and then and that kind of thing. And so I wanted something that I could use, on the, to basically mirror the screen. And I was so frustrated because I started using an Amazon Fire HD. Newest version, 8-inch, and I couldn't get it to mirror. And as I read up on this, I found out that that Amazon actually they disabled that ability. You can't mirror it with HDMI, with a cable. You can't do it over the air. You try a regular Google Cast, it will not work because Amazon wants you to buy a Fire TV. And so, I got this better, more expensive Samsung Galaxy Tab S3. And I ran into the same kind of issue. There's a USB-C port on this. So you think, you just get a USB-C to HDMI adapter. No, forget it. You can't do that because, they don't have anything That USB-C doesn't connect to anything that's HDMI in there. There's no HDMI signal. And they, using the CATS software, it only works if you have a Samsung TV because they want you to buy a Samsung TV. And so, so I was really frustrated. And, you know, I used this program. I've got it both in Mac and Windows called Reflector. And Reflector will pick up an AirPlay signal or a Google Cast signal over Wi-Fi. And so I started kind of scrambling around in here, and I found, and this is my favorite thing. It's definitely not the device, but my favorite thing is this little utility called Air Server Connect for Apple TV. And that's in the Google Play Store, Air Server Connect for Apple TV. And Air Server Connect basically tricks an Apple TV or a utility like Reflector into thinking that it's receiving an AirPlay signal from an iOS device. And so I can do it perfectly. I can mirror this device. And then I even went back with the Amazon Fire HD, and I was able to load up the same app and but anyway, Air Server Connect basically was a lifesaver for me, or it will be once I'm making videos, once I'm doing some instructional stuff, because that was the perfect solution. The downside of it is that when you use Reflector does this neat little thing where it'll put your device frame around it. You know, like if you've got an iPhone, it'll put an iPhone frame. If an iPad, it'll put the iPad frame around it. Well, for both the Amazon Fire HD and the Samsung Galaxy Tab S3, because it's using this Air Server Connect utility, making Reflector think that it's an iOS device, it tries to put like either for the Galaxy Tab, it tries to put a iPad frame around it, and for the Amazon Fire, it gave me like every option of iPod Touch, iPhone, iPad, every different variation. But it wouldn't give me any of the Android frames. And I contacted the company, and they said, "Well, we don't support Air Server, but we do want to work with you to try to figure out why your Galaxy Tab isn't showing up through Google Cast." So that may end up working out in the long run. But anyway, Air Server Connect, I highly recommend if you have any of these devices where the company has disabled any kind of external viewing, which is very frustrating.
All right, Wes, have you got one?
Yeah, I got one. I'm just going to waste time.
Okay.
So if you are a fan of Stranger Things, or even if you are not a fan of Stranger Things, iOS and Android came out with a video game that I believe is free that plays like a combination between the original Legend of Zelda and Link to the Past. Designed perfectly for touch interface, runs brilliantly on my iPad Pro, and I'm pretty sure it runs just as well on a larger screen Android device. And it's a heck of a lot of fun.
What's it called?
It's just called Stranger Things.
Oh, I'm looking it up right now.
And you know, instead of
the TV show Stranger Things,
it's Stranger Things the game. So it takes place in between the first and second season.
And it looks like an old Nintendo game.
Yeah, it really does. It's totally retro.
Like you from know, in the Zelda, late when you 80s go
through 90s. When you go through a temple or a dungeon, you get a utility at the end. Well, on this one, you're collecting all the party from the game, and they each have their different abilities, and you can upgrade them and stuff. And there's whole different things you can do, and there's fetch quests. And I wasted many hours just playing it, and it was a lot of fun. And it was tricky.
I'm installing.
And it was actually right there now. Are parts that were hard. Yeah, I was wanted like a top down Zelda game on my iPad, so this is as close as I've gotten, and it's a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, let me jump in real quick and tell you this. Rick mentioned the latest version Fire tablet, and that's what I have. I actually had that tablet that Rick had and then sold it on eBay to...
You had the Samsung tablet that I have.
Samsung tablet that Rick was talking about. I had that, and I liked it. I don't know, it didn't feel as frustrating to me, I guess, because I'm more used to...
Well, you weren't trying to do the things that I was doing.
That's probably it. And you know, your problem of Samsung wanting you to buy a Samsung TV, it sort of reminds me of another company that doesn't let you send video from, you know, your iPad to, let's see, what is it? Oh, you got to have an Apple TV to do that. But anyway, it's sort of the
same. No, because I can use an HDMI cable to plug into anything.
Well, you're right. Anyway, this is the brand new, the most recent 10-inch Fire tablet, and I love this thing. It is, if you're in the Amazon ecosystem and enjoy Amazon products, if you're an Amazon Prime customer, it's really nice. I've had previous versions, and they always felt a little laggy or slow, but this thing is lightning quick. It's pretty fast, and it's cheap. It's the one that I have is the higher version with the more storage, and so I think it's under $200. I sold the Samsung tablet and an older Chromebook and, I don't know, about five or six things and sort of rechanged everything. But one of the things I have, thanks to a tip from my good friend Rick there, that's sort of blurry, but you notice the Google Play Store is running on the Fire tablet. So as a result of that, I was able to run the beta version of Bible from Logos and Bible Study from Olive Tree. And who knows, maybe some other good Android Bible apps will show up on this one time.
I'm sure they will.
Real soon.
Can I say, Kevin? Yeah. I've got the beta version of that. And I would say, you know, because again, I was wrestling with a Samsung tablet. I think as far as Android tablets go, the Amazon Fire tablets are the most consistent as far as interface goes, as far as, to me, it's a little bit more mature. Of course, they're shielding you from a lot of things. But you know, to me, it was the 8-inch one is the perfect size. The 10-inch I haven't tried, but for me, that's the perfect size for a reader, you know, because it's kind of like a it's kind of like an iPad Mini, But if you just want to read books or whatever, but it's a great tablet. I really recommend it.
Screen. By the way, we'll find the link that we use to install the Google Play Store, and we'll share that with you so that if you want to do the same on your Android Fire tablet, to say it's an Android tablet is a little bit confusing, only because it definitely is an Android tablet. But
the average person probably doesn't know it, though, who's using it.
Yeah. Most people who don't have a clue about Android versus iOS versus, you know, Fire OS, they just know it's a Fire and it runs Amazon stuff. And one of the problems with Amazon is developers are a little bit reticent to put their apps in it because apparently they have some pretty draconian requirements or something. I don't know. And so, like, for example, the Bible Study app from Olive Tree that's available in the Android is from, like, last November. You know, and they've updated like two or three times since then. So that's one of the reasons I was so excited to learn that Rick had found a way to put the Play Store on there without rooting the tablet.
And you can sideload to it because that's how I got the Accordance for Android beta on it was through sideloading it on there.
But I've done that before, but I found that a lot of the sideloaded apps, for some reason, if you don't have those Google Play underpinnings underneath them, they're a little more buggy. They crash more often. Now I am having an issue in that the Fire tablet Amazon App Store is fighting with the Google Play Store to have the rights to update the apps.
So
you get a little bit of some weird, strange things. And some of the apps, like I installed Facebook and Netflix from the Amazon App Store, but now they won't update from the Amazon App Store.
The Google Play Store took over. I had that happen on mine too.
Yeah, well, and they haven't offered an update from the Google Play Store, so I don't know what's going on there.
My Evernote got updated, I think, to the Google Play version. But, hey, as long as it's still working, I don't care.
As long as it's working and you're getting the latest version, then I'm happy. So that's one thing. And just as a little bit of a tease, the next time we're here, I will show off.
There you go.
Nice.
I am extremely pleased with this, and this is the Pixelbook. And today, or yesterday, I got the pen. And this, I won't go into it too many details, but this is every bit as good as the Apple Pencil. The problem is there aren't the apps to support it like there are with the Pencil from the iPad Pro. But the device itself is every bit as good. It shares the same, can you guess what the greatest flaw with this stylus is that it shares with the Apple Pencil?
Doesn't have a clip.
There's nowhere to store the dumb thing. Come on, people. Mm-hmm. Samsung gets that right. You got to give them that. Now, it's their stylus isn't nearly as good as this stylus, but at least they figured out a way to keep it with the device all the time, so you don't have to worry about it.
Except for the one version where if you put it in backwards, you like
turn
the
device.
Oh, but not with the tablet.
That was also the same one that blew up, by the way.
You have to have the keyboard. You have to have the keyboard to have a place to put the pin for the tablet. But at least it has the clip, so you could always put it in a shirt pocket.
Yeah, you're right. You do have to have the keyboard. But at least it came there. Yeah. Anyway, I'll talk more about that maybe next time we're on here. It's just screaming fast. It's a beautiful machine, and it has me. I'm back to Chrome OS most of the time now. So, all right, guys, this has been fun, and we do this periodically. I used to say every week, but we don't do it every week anymore. So probably the easiest way for you to enjoy the Theotech podcast is subscribe to it on YouTube. So please go ahead and do that. Hit our YouTube channel and subscribe there. You can find that by going to theotech.com first. You can also listen to us. We're in the iTunes App Store and other places on other devices. For example, I listen, just to test it, on Pocket Casts. You can find us in Pocket Casts, which is available on the web, Android, iOS, as well as many other fine podcasting apps. And so I hope you'll check us out, subscribe to us, get word to us if you like the show. Tell us if you hate it and what we could do to make it better. Probably not showing my ugly face would be a big improvement, but we're going to do that anyway. But thanks, guys, for being with us, and thank you all for watching and listening up to this point. Sayonara.
Bye.
See ya.